This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, so fired up. We've got Barrett Sprousen. He's the Vice President of Sales and Project Marketing at Peterson Group. Obviously, Peterson, a lot of our listeners will be familiar with Peterson Group. Some really exciting projects. We talk about up-and-coming neighborhoods and, spoiler alert, the West Side.
Well, when you say up and coming neighborhoods, I feel like that is the West Side in a lot of respects, which is a conversation we haven't really had on this show before. How do you reimagine and revitalize a mature neighborhood with a strong neighborhood feel and a strong, right. I mean, brand? This kind of feels a little off, but a strong brand and a deep history.
Sure, exactly. And we cover that today, including Barrett's three top investments in the Lower Mainland.
He's an analytical guy, right?
Super analytical.
I feel like there's a method to the madness here, and he kind of unpacks and lets you behind the curtain.
We ran a little bit long. The conversation is about an hour and 10 minutes, but it's worth it. And it's a fantastic conversation. Matt, before we get to that, of course.
Before we get to that, Adam, we have the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. The headline this week: current pre-sale market chasing affordability.
We've talked about chasing affordability on this show a lot over the years. What does it mean in this context?
Well, in this context, I mean, this seems like logical thinking about the current interest rate environment. But in 2024, we have seen approximately 45 new pre-sale project launches in the Lower Mainland in the first 5 months of this year.
Okay.
So typically, there's a split between the Fraser Valley and Greater Vancouver. 70% of them are in Greater Vancouver. 30% are in the Fraser Valley. This year, 50% are in the Fraser Valley. And why is that? Well, logically, buyers are price point sensitive. There's a lot of first-time home buyers. They're looking for markets where they can afford to actually purchase and can imagine making those monthly payments in the future. The markets where we're seeing increased activity, Coquitlam and Surrey, these two markets combined have seen 20 new project launches between them, accounting for 44% of the year-to-date total in the Lower Mainland.
Wow. So you can imagine, but part of it is likely the interest rate, but also because of the costs associated with new construction and price points, it really is chasing affordability.
It is. And that's where the new launches are. And as Kevin Skipworth, past guest fan favorite, famously said, where you see the inventory, you'll see the sales.
Right.
And that's where developers are confident. And that's where buyers are purchasing right now. If you like that and want to hear more from the MLA Canada Advisory Team, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLAcanada.com to subscribe.
And of course, Matt, this episode is also sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate company in Vancouver. We have all of our listings featured over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, our site. But also, Matt, we have a brand new listing.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight our new listing, Adam, at the Taylor. This is unit 610 at 550 Taylor, 590 square foot, one bed, super plan. It has, if you're interested in work from home, this has like a bright south-facing solarium with a built-in office space that is phenomenal. It sits just above the townhomes, like a couple floors above the townhomes. So you're looking out over the park and at False Creek, and it's all protected because there's a park. Like that's kind of a forever view, honestly. It's right in the heart of Crosstown. I feel like this is a neighborhood that doesn't quite get the acclaim it should. You're right by the seawall, Gastown, downtown, Rogers Arena, Costco, TNT, BC Place. It's got it all. 610-550 Taylor. asking $599 for 590 square feet. It's also a screaming deal. Parking and storage as well.
And if you want to check that out, you can have a look at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. While you're there, grab the sold plan, which
just
is...
Just hit sell with us.
Yes, yeah, sell all you with gotta us. Do. You get an instant download of the sold plan. Sold, of course, in this case, stands for start on launch date. It's our step-by-step guide for getting top dollar in the shortest amount of time. It's evergreen guide. It's an evergreen guide, I should say.
Yeah.
Where you can actually
use that
just
preposition.
It gets you... Yeah, it gives you steps to really just get your home ready for market. And it's worth its weight in gold, and it's free, and it's an instant download. If you're in the industry and you want to look at it, download it. We'll share.
We share. Sell with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But without further ado, Adam, this is a show that we got to get to. We run long because it's a great conversation. It's Barrett Sprousen, Vice President of Sales and Project Marketing at Peterson Group.
Yeah, I love this one. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Berquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam. With 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds, Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Barrett Sprousen. He is the Vice President of Sales and Project Marketing at Peterson Group. How you doing, Barrett?
Pretty good. Sun's shining.
Yeah. Well, today, this week, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for coming down to the studio, Barrett. Maybe can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah.
Sounds like you have an interesting kind of trajectory to where you're at now.
Yeah, I would say probably a little bit more convoluted than most. I immigrated here in 2001. Takes a bit of time to do that. And got started with IntraWest, as in the sales and marketing arm of the kind of newly minted Playground Real Estate, which was the sales and marketing arm of IntraWest, selling condos in the wilds of Panorama in the Kootenays on the ski hill. Kind of a funny story how that happened, because I was on this track to be a corporate sales guy, like selling like enterprise software or some boring shit like that. And then a friend of mine had been hired to join from Sid and Pete to join the company and start selling that project up there. And they, right before the project launched, they used to get all the salespeople from all the resorts into one spot and do like this 3-day learning thing.
Yeah.
And there was this crusty old sales guy on the sales team who was taking a leak. And he was in the washroom, and he turns to the guy next to him and goes, "Goodness, isn't this a load of bullshit? Like, can't believe they got us out here." The guy he turned to is the president of the company, the newly minted kind of Greg Ashley. Yeah. So he walks out and goes to the director of the project. He's like, "Who's this guy?" Out. And so my buddy called me like the next week, and he's like, "So I think you'd be pretty good at this."
Wow.
And it's in Panorama. And I'm like, "Where?"
Oh, because like I was thinking you.
Hope was like,
yeah.
Was like.
So you landed, you were in Vancouver and you decided to head into the interior. Wild.
Like I had never been past Hope. Like, yeah. Literally. And when I went to check it out, like back in those days, listening to the radio in the rental car, my wife was like, "What are we doing?" So the rental car out there, and there's like country all the way around to country. Right. Country. I was like, what is this? Like,
keep scanning.
Doing? Yeah.
I'm horrible at accents. I once asked a waitress in Whistler, what part of Australia are you from? And she was like, from England.
I'm from Toronto.
But where did you immigrate from?
Well, directly from South Africa. But I grew up in Malawi, but I did all my schooling in South Africa and then moved my wife, her family immigrated in the mid-90s. And so it was always part of the marriage contract that we'd come here. So
Right. Here
we are.
Lots of new South Africans here in the last year or two. It seems like it's on the uptick.
The last decade for sure.
Yeah.
It's a constant stream. Like once, you know,
a lot of doctors.
Once we find a place, doctors.
Yeah.
Have a good medical program over there.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm always curious, like, what was your first impression of Canada, but also of Vancouver?
Well, you know what's funny is it was probably my wife and I's biggest conversation leading up to getting married was like moving here because I was like fully, I'm African, like I'm not leaving Africa. So I said I would give it a 5-year crack. And after a year, I was like, okay, I'm in, I get it.
No like, kidding.
Like, wow. I don't need it. Like I'm good. Like rock and roll, let's do this thing. So that was the thing for me is like just it was silly things. Like you're walking down the street and you can, there's no gates and no fences and no barbed wire. And I was like, first of all, it's like you can see people on the street and they can see you. That's weird. But like, how cool is it that I've got friends a block and a half away and I can walk up to their house at 9 p.m. or from their house at 9 p.m. at night and be like, okay, cool. And that hasn't changed, right? In 20 years, you can still walk home. Like my daughter walks home from her friends a block and a half down the street at 9 p.m. And, you know, we're like, just text me when you get there.
So when people talk about crime in Vancouver, do you kind of roll your eyes? Or?
Oh, it's not, I mean, I can see why, because your context is Vancouver.
Yeah.
Right? But like, my brother visited a few years ago and we were parking it when I was at Intercorp, and we were parking in Park Place and there's signs up saying, lock your vehicle, take your personal goods. He's like, what is that? Like, people don't lock that. He's like, I want to be a criminal in this country. Like, it's so easy. Yeah. So no. Like, I know that we have issues and, like, there's it's different, but it's not. Like, it's just night and day.
Right.
Yeah.
You started real estate in Canada. Like, you started at a really interesting time because there's been, like, you know, it's mostly been a bull market with the exceptions of, like, a few
couple
trough
years,
markets along the way.
Yeah.
But it's been a great time to start real estate, and you've seen huge changes to the city.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that is interesting about my convoluted journey is that I worked in places that weren't experiencing what the city was experiencing. I always say if I had like done my time in Panorama and come straight back to Vancouver, my financial situation would look a lot different
than it does
or did, because I would have missed out on, because I arrived in Vegas and the brakes were on. Like I think I touched down in like 2005.
So you went from selling a ski resort or the homes around the ski resort, and then you went to Vegas?
Well, I went to Whistler first. And did the fractional thing. We sold At Nature's Door, like we used to call it At Nature's Back Door because it was a bit of a tricky sale.
Yeah.
And so that was tough. And Whistler at that time in 2004 was like the market was not hot. So that was like, you take your, talk about taking your D prospects and turning them into A prospects. Like that was the journey there.
Yeah.
And then I did launched a small sort of single family home site project in Vernon. And that was also a bit interesting because it was kind of right in the time where Alberta was kind of going but not going. And that was interesting. And then moved down to got my citizenship here and got a work permit in the States and went down to Vegas for a year. And literally, we're supposed to launch 3 projects in the year. It turned to 1. That project got canceled because there just wasn't enough pre-sales.
Yeah.
And by then the writing was on the wall and my wife was like, okay, we are done with this journey. Like, let's go. And back to Van we came. And that's where I joined. So at that point I joined Sotheby's International Realty. They had a project marketing arm. So I was with them for 4.5, almost 5 years, doing mostly recreational stuff, but like all over BC, in Victoria, the Okanagan a little bit. And so those markets were all very different than what was going on in the urban world.
Right.
Like here was this cranking, and those markets were like post 08, 09. They were in the shits. It was the stuff we had to deal with at Revelstoke, trying to close homes that we'd sold to like mostly Americans who were like, I don't care, like I'm out.
Yeah.
you can sue me if you want, but I got no money, so yeah. Good luck. Yeah. And you know, so that was its own journey. And in 2011, I joined George and I worked with Magnum Projects for about a year and a half. And that was really cool. That was my first kind of dipping my toe into this urban market at a time where it was just kind of coming out. We launched Quintet in Richmond, and that was my first kind of exposure to, you know, the urban fast floor, sell really fast, lots of humans. It was like a fish market, and I was like, this is a once in a lifetime. Like, this is never going to happen to me again.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Telus Garden, same kind of thing. And then I joined Intracorp just after that. So then I've been with Intracorp. I was with Intracorp from 2012 early until just January.
Very recently, right?
Yeah. And now I've just joined Peterson in January.
Wow. So what prompted the change?
So good question. So very happy human at Intracorp, like really cool company, lots going on. They've taken a big position in purpose-built rental over the last few years. And that was really fun being part of the early evolution of building up, you know, that portfolio. And kind of what I evolved to at Intracorp was kind of being really involved with, like, I kind of like to dumb things down. So I call it, what is the box? Like, how big is the box? How many boxes do we fit in there? And what goes in it? So like, what's the spec? And how do we make that really compelling for the end user? So that's kind of the space I evolved into at Intracorp and really found my kind of niche. So, and I really love that stuff. Like, that's kind of making it fit for the market. That process was, we had a whole bunch of things in the market. My next condo project was going to be a bit of a gap. And Peterson was looking for someone who could come in and help. You know, over the last few years, they've really built out quite a portfolio and have got to the front end of development. And they're looking to kind of really build out a program and some more systems and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. Intracorp is a really well-oiled machine. You know, I looked at my next decade and think I could keep, you know, oiling the machine, or I could come and help be part of building a new machine. So
right.
That's what kind of got me, was like, okay, this is going to be super cool. Like, there's a big portfolio, really great team, well-capitalized, and an opportunity to be part of building it.
So for people listening, you know, a lot of people have heard of Peterson, mm-hmm. but it's not one of the, you know, the Intracorp, yeah. the Bozo, yeah. you know, it's not quite the same in terms of like brand
recognition.
Yeah, brand recognition. Can you tell us a little bit about Peterson Group and maybe a little bit about that portfolio?
Yeah, sure. So the group itself, it's like a, you know, I've been there for a hot minute. So let's take everything I say with a little bit of a grain of salt. So January to today. But we have many different categories of business. So when I looked at Peterson 10, 12 months ago, I thought, you know, Peterson lends money to other developers.
Right.
And that's it.
I've always thought of them as being kind of the financial backing of a lot of projects.
Yeah. So, and that's true. So yes, check. But then alongside that, there's, I don't even list all the things. We have a hospitality group. So we own the Kamana Hotel. We own half of the Shangri-La in Vancouver, the Shangri-La in Toronto, and the Pac Rim. So that we own a whole bunch of restaurants. So there's a hospitality section. And then we have a commercial holding and a residential asset management holding. So there's an income producing property segment. So we've got a mortgage business too. So there's a number of different categories. The newest category would be being developers. So that's where me and the development team come in that we're now taking projects through the development cycle and bringing them to market.
Do you have a team that's building as part of the group, or are you contracting?
No, we're outsourcing the construction. Yeah. So we're not self-performing construction. And currently we also third party the sales component of projects. So for example, I'm working on our Ashley project on the west side is with MLA,
right?
As well as Frame, which is on Kingsway and Glen. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
And so that's with MLA. And then we have two projects with Magnum Projects.
Right.
So those are also west side. So on Cambium 43rd and Manson and Ash. So we do work with different groups.
Wow. Yeah. So what is, just for listeners that don't quite understand the process of project marketing and sales, like what is your day-to-day look like?
Tough question. So it's,
it changes probably all the time.
Yeah, all the time. But it varies from thinking about, so if you take the different buckets of projects, we've got projects that are in tempo. So for example, Frame and Ashley are both in a tempo programs, which means we've launched and now we've achieved a number of sales up front. And now we're ticking along, doing different things every month, getting people through the door, writing deals, going back and forth on things. Like today's market, there's, you know, the buyers have a better opportunity of taking their time, coming in and measuring things for furniture. Yeah. And, you know, try do that in 2022. Yeah. 2022. I'm telling you when you buy, what you buy, what price you buy it for,
and go line up,
and how long you're going to stand in that line.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm
and what the price is if
three homes,
every 20 minutes.
You
might
can
change.
Have this one. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's not the case today, right? So the buyer has more of an opportunity to go. So I'm seeing that. So, you know, they're saying, I want this parking stall. And I'm like, I'm not writing that in. And we go back and forth on the parking stall. Like, how many times, when does that happen?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a tempo program. So we've got two of those going on. And so that takes a lot of, like, I'm on the phone all the time with, or texting in 2024 with the MLA sales director, Melody Han, who's fantastic. Right. So shout out to Melody. Yeah. Like we're all going back and forth all the time about what this buyer wants. So this one has a question, and there's seven questions from the salesperson, and you know, so that's a thing. And then on the projects that are in the development pipeline, there the development team is coming with, you know, reviewing floor plans. If it's really early, I'm saying, you know, these are the sizes we'd like on a project. If it was, you know, if we've got a floor plate of X square feet, I'm saying we want 9 homes in there. Maybe the architect thinks they should have 7 homes on that plate. And I'm like, no, who's the buyer for that? We need it to be smaller so that it can be affordable.
Right.
And so we're going through that process of how do we get another home on the plate? So that's a constant kind of thing with the architect. And I'm pushing hard on, you know, to work with the team to ensure that we have the right sizes. And then you fast forward a little bit and it's working with, again, the development team on like, what is the spec? What kind of things do buyers care about? What are realtors give us feedback about all the time? What do you guys tell us about what people care about?
Right.
You know, do they want a closet that's 19 feet long or do they want a double vanity? You know, like stupid things like that. It comes down to like what double vanity, or we had a huge conversation the other day about tub or double vanity.
Right.
Yeah, it's like a.
Who would have guessed in 1995 that you'd be having this conversation in Vancouver in 2024?
Right? Tub of vanity.
Yeah.
What do people care about?
But I mean, one thing that strikes me, it's kind of maybe a before the conversation about the West Side, because I think there's a lot to unpack about where you guys are at on the West Side. But like you say, okay, there's a big box, there's boxes in it. And then what goes in those little boxes, like, and it's, you know, tub or double vanity type stuff.
Yeah.
But can you talk about how you, because there's a lot that goes into tub or double vanity, like what can people afford?
Yeah.
Who's the buyer?
Yeah.
Does it change whether you're talking about, you know, Oak Ridge or Kingsway and Earl?
Yeah.
Like, can you talk about how you take all those kind of components to figure out, is it a tub?
Yeah, good question. So different groups use different processes for that. So I that's where I would say, you know, what I say is not, that's just how I've learned. And I'm a little bit, so I'm a bit of a weird mix of an analytical human, but kind of disorganized too. So, but the way I approach that is through data. So I go out and look for data points that then I then verify with anecdotal feedback from the market. So what I've done over the past is I've taken an audit of everything in the market and gone through to like the nth degree on what makes up the homes that are in the market today. So in the project, so like down to like the size of the tile, you know, so you've got a Bosch dishwasher. Is it a Bosch? Is it 3 series or 5 series? Like what is the, you know, that like right down to the nitty gritty. And then once you take that on a market perspective and you look at it across 10 or 15 projects in a submarket, you can get a real sense of where you track that over time. So I tracked that over time in Metrotown, for example, and it went from, you know, 2011, 12, 13 projects, but everyone was doing different things. cabinets from Germany, cabinets from somewhere, a fancy, like a mixed bag of appliances. And then as it got to later on, 17, 18, 19, we're all the same. It's like Bosch cooktop, you know, integrated appliances. It's the light scheme and the lighter scheme.
Right.
Yeah. Right. There's like, there's not really a, you know, a dark scheme. And it's lighter and lighter.
Right.
So, you know, that evolution, you can see that when you get into that kind of nitty gritty. So then when our construction team comes back and goes, oh, my buddy at that wherever said that they're doing blah, 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 then we can go, we can look at the data and say, what is, no, buddy's not doing that. They're actually doing this.
Right.
And so then it takes away the debate on, I think I like green countertops, you know, versus you like the pink ones.
Yeah.
Versus you're in like avocado green. And so then we can say, well, look at the market. Like, this is what the market is doing. Where do we want to sit in the spectrum? And these guys are selling at this price. If we want to be at this price, we need to be doing something that's different or not different or the same or different.
Obviously, we've talked a lot on this show about the development community being a copycat kind of community. What do you think the evolution, like, well, how does everything level out and why? Is it because of a better feedback loop and is it buyer-driven? Is that?
I think it's a bit of both. It comes down to like what is, so I don't know about, I think the reason you do that big matrix is to decide where you want to fit.
Mm.
So for example, in Metrotown, I went through that, we made a decision that we weren't going to have all the doodads, like the, you know, the countertop, the, what are those things called? That like the Lazy Susan things that I can't, no one can see what I'm doing with my hands.
Yeah. So
like the Lazy Susan thing or the shelf that comes down from the upper shelves. And,
right.
You know, so we decided not to do that stuff, but to scale it back, do a really clean design that stripped out some of that cost. And we're able to come in at a price that was maybe $10 less than our competition. So I think what it is it's two things. It's understanding what does the buyer actually care about?
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you need to do to be competitive and do the things that they care about, not just the things that make you feel like there's value there.
Right.
And I also learned that with like options. I think options are a little bit of a chicken shit developer thing where if you don't know what the buyer wants, oh, it's just option it.
Interesting.
Right? So if you know what, if you're convicted on what is the right thing for the buyer, you can just go, this is what we're going to do versus, oh, I don't know, can't decide. Okay, we'll just option it.
Yeah.
Like, so, and there's a strategy around that. Like you can option to understand, like, what do people care about? If they pay for it, then sure. Then in the next one, maybe you include it, right?
Yeah.
So there's that, I get that. But I find sometimes we use the options as a, well, I don't know, like
a hedge.
It's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like a hedge. That's maybe a nicer way to say it.
chicken shit works.
Yeah. So I think so that's one part of it is understanding the landscape. And then the other part of it is getting, I get a ton of feedback from realtors. So people that we have relationships with have done, you know, call it the focus group where they're telling, and we put on the wall, like, you know, if you have, would you choose this walk-in closet or a double vanity? Because you can't have both.
Yeah.
Then they go, well, my clients would prefer the double vanity versus the walk-in closet.
Well, I would imagine MLA and Magnum is giving you, like, they're hearing everything on the floor. It's like constant feedback.
Yeah. And the benefit of the Magnums and the Rennies and the MLAs is that they have other data points from other mm-hmm. projects. But I only know what I know from my own direct feedback and from relationships in the real estate community
mm-hmm.
versus lots of different data points.
So in many cases, it sounds like you're like the deal or no deal guy too, because you're representing the vendor mm-hmm. on the negotiations.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're okay.
Well, and that's the interesting, I was thinking about this on the way over here, is that, so I've been a seller for, you know, a decade and a half, right? So sitting in the seat of signing deals and saying deal or no deal or countering and, you know, so it's quite an interesting to think about the evolution of the market and different markets. So you go back to 2019 and think about what early 2019 felt like as a market, and it was the doldrums.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was like, there, it was, and we had launched a project in late 2018 and sold, like we caught the tail end of a market and we were giving away nothing. And then you move into, and we had to hit our pre-sale requirements, so we gave away a little bit more. And those the next 100 buyers, it took probably we sold 150 things in 2 months, and then it took 6 months to do another 50. And do you think those 50 got a slightly better deal than the first?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, they did.
Right.
Just because we needed to get to a pre-sale.
Yeah.
And so and time was not on our side. And the market, like the buyers, there was just no market. So you had to make a market. And we did all kinds of crazy stuff. But we got to our pre-sale number. The project ended up doing really, really well. And, you know, over the time, like the market did this at the end and, you know, all those buyers were just fine. So it closed at a higher price point once, you know, in 2022, middle of 2022 when it closed. Sure. All those early buyers did just fine.
Right.
But there was a little blip in the middle where some people got lucky.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I talk about, like, if we come back to the West Side, like the, I don't know if this is a term or not, but I talk about the counter-cyclical investor. So mm-hmm. you kind of want to be a counter, if you're really an investor, you want to be a buy when the market's going up and like, it's going to be a home run. Yeah. But if you really want to get into it, these are the opportunities now.
Right.
Is to be a little bit of a counter-cyclical investor when everybody's on the sideline. This is where you can pick up some deals.
So yeah, that's maybe a great kind of point to move to, you know, we were talking before we went live, like Petersen has, you know, we mentioned that project on the East Side, but their portfolio is heavily weighted towards the West Side.
Yeah.
Right now. And the West Side, I mean, our podcast, I think, is an example of this. Like, we don't talk all that much about the West Side.
It's interesting because we've watched the, I remember, like, we've watched the East Side, you know, the gap between the West Side and the East Side, and also the stigma maybe around parts of the mm-hmm. East Side changed so much over the past,
yeah.
you know, close to 10 years that we've been doing this show. And mm-hmm. now it's to the point that, you know, it's people talk about, you know, the almost like the rebirth of the West Side because mm-hmm. we're clearly going into this moment now where the West Side is changing with multiplexes, yeah. with upzoning, also with what's coming. And I mean, this yeah. is really what we want to focus on.
Yeah, totally.
Today.
That was a long introduction.
Well, no, I mean all of that is fantastic context. But I think the big thing is like thinking about the West Side maybe. Maybe, first of all, like, why do you think Petersen is so weighted?
Well, I can't really speak to too much history, just, you know.
Right, of course. Yeah.
Since January. So what I've been able to learn is that we're believers in the long term. So Ben Young, who owns the company, has been around for a while. So he's not here for today or tomorrow, but 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years. Like the mindset is very long term. So I come from my trajectory through the business has been through the merchant developer where we're turning all the time, right?
Yeah.
So we don't intercorp, we don't hold assets. It's just turn it all the time. So Petersen's a bit different from that perspective. They believe in the longer term. It's just a long term play. So I would say that's probably one thing is that if you think about a blue chip kind of location, the West Side really checks all the boxes. So mm-hmm. it's already something. If you think about Oak Ridge, go back to Oak Ridge 20 years ago, it was already cool. Like it was already, people wanted to be there. Retailers wanted to be there. It was, I think it's kind of the second highest retail rates in the country. So like Oak Ridge has always been a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting a shot in the arm. And I think Petersen saw that and believed in it maybe before other people clearly lots of people believe that. Grosvenor, right. Mayfair West.
Sure.
You know, West Bank, Oak Ridge. You know, people obviously believe that. It's just, I think Petersen is thinking the long term. It doesn't matter for Petersen whether it takes a year or 10 years or 20 years. Like Langara Gardens is going to be a thing. It's already a perfectly happy income-producing property that provides rental homes to a whole bunch of people. But it's going to be a bigger thing in a decade's time.
And just for listeners, Langara Gardens is a future master plan community.
Yes.
And it's all rental or?
No, there'll be a component of strata, but it's mostly rental.
And you're doing that with Concert Properties?
That is a partnership with Concert Properties, correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And 20 acres just on the West Side, like, how?
Yeah, that's
you know, how cool is that? I kind of talk about the big three being kind of Oak Ridge Park, the Mayfair West by Grosvenor, and then the Heatherlands. like those three on their own, and then you add Langara Gardens as a fourth. And I don't really even think about it today because it's kind of a long term, it's longer term than those other three communities. Right. But you take that, those three things, and as they evolve and get going and get the momentum behind them and things start happening, it's going to change the landscape entirely. You guys know Ken Leong. I sat down with Ken last week, Ken and Mary, and kind of picked their brain because they've been around for ages. And, you know, Ken talks about, you know,
back he's a very smart guy.
Yeah, right. And kind of numbers human and kind of, you know, I drink his Kool-Aid a bit. So, you know, he talks about back in the day, we have the golden triangle of why people loved this zone. And the golden triangle, I think, was like, what is it? Shaughnessy, Kerrisdale, South Granville.
Right.
And that's evolved into the Golden Circle by the addition of Oak Ridge and South Canby. And I pulled like the current listings just ahead of this in that zone, and it's almost a perfect circle. It's kind of cool. So like that zone has, people want to be in that zone, and there's a new reason to be there. And that's all the stuff that's coming.
Ken also had joined Oakwin around that time, and it's the Golden Circle is the whole brand. So
it's like, I gotta get rid of this triangle.
So maybe he's a bit self-serving there.
I'm just thinking, like, one of the things we've talked a lot about on the show is, you know, the start of Yale Town going from industrial or Olympic Village, or, you know, moving into Brentwood, same thing. It's like, it's like imagining residential communities where residential communities didn't really exist. This strikes me as something entirely different. And it is, obviously, because the West Side, as you said offline, is like a mature community.
Yeah, it's a mature
it has a history. Yeah. It has an identity. How do you think about, what are the challenges, I guess, to kind of reimagining a community that is like the elite spot to be in Vancouver?
I think there's the challenges of change. People don't always love change.
Right.
So, you know, when you think about what these communities will bring, they'll also bring some diversity to the community, which I would say is a good thing for vibrancy and life, and kind of the extra shot in the arm is that you'll have a range of humans and of different, you know, economic backgrounds and strengths and all living in that zone, which I think is super positive for any community.
Right.
And you know, I worked with when I started with George, the developer that was developing Quintet, talked about in Asian culture, and so white guy.
Right.
So I'm just going to say what he said was, we think where there's lots of people, that means good things. So that means life, prosperity, vibrancy, lots of people is good things. And he was talking about, like, we just want to get lots of people to the events, right? So my point is, when you talk about a new community that's evolving and it's got lots of different people, that brings life and vibrancy, and they're going to spend money and they're going to bring their kids to the new daycare, and they're going to take the, you know, Oak Ridge is building its 5-story community center.
Right.
Like, that's going to be a thing. There's the new community center on the west side being developed, which I think is the biggest since like Hillcrest and like 15 years ago. So there's all those amenities that are going to help and be a spot for the new people that will live in the rental and the condos. And so it's got to change. And I think that will be hard for some people because they, you know, I like my west side like my west side is. But the addition of humans and amenities will bring a kick of life.
Like, I think, and also it's interesting because I don't think people really quite understand the scale of Oak Ridge and where it's going. Like, I mean, I've heard people at the city basically refer to it as like downtown south. Like, the future is like, it's going to be like another downtown almost.
I think that's bang on. And to be, until I started really digging into it, like in my previous world, I was part of, you know, launching and selling Bell Park on the west side on 52nd and just off Canby, and then Livingston House, a little 55, which is actually funny because it's between Canby and the project that I'm currently going to be doing. Ashley, it's right there. And at that time, it was all future. It was just like a twinkling in the eye. And now it's all happening and Oak Ridge is going up. And I think definitely, I think when we talk about downtown, I think the difference is, I think about like lawyers' offices and so maybe not that, but Oak Ridge has always had like a medical component.
Right.
So now you add in like next level retail. and the additional humans. And it's definitely another energy center. So maybe
like fine dining,
new
parks, new community centers. Like it's, you can see. Yeah.
And so this is not, again, I'm not the target market for this, but the French retailer, Chaumet, is a brand that I think it's a jewelry brand that's opening in.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. Target market. Yeah.
We're the target market.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But the first store in North America is in Oak Ridge.
Right.
Like, you call it Hermes, figure. Don't you? Yeah.
I don't even get the joke.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
So, okay, but that's actually, because I had a question here, just thinking about this, the idea of like, going into a mature neighborhood and giving it the shot in the arm, and the shot in the arm being like thousands of homes, much more density. There is still, and I think that speaks to it, like a barrier of entry,
point.
Right?
Yeah.
And like one thing we've talked a lot about on the show is that if you chart the stats in Vancouver over the last, Metro Vancouver, it's like a lot of it is a chasing affordability,
yeah.
Right?
Like definitely.
So yeah. how do you kind of thread that needle of like the barrier to entry and affordability and peopling
and
thousands of homes that are actually occupied by a diverse community, yeah. Right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the short answer.
But I ran by Oak Ridge last night and I literally thought that was what I was thinking. Like yeah. How, it's interesting you say, I don't know, because I was like, how does this actually work?
I think how it works. So here's the thing. So on the affordability thing, so we've done just over 20 deals at Ashley at, call it just shy of $1,800 a foot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gobsmacked in this market with the sentiment and like the, you know, we've done 20 deals on a four-story concrete building on the west side. Like, go figure.
Mm-hmm. It's a real product, actually. It's
very
pretty
nice.
Special. Thank and you. To be on such a quiet, like,
yeah.
it's pretty special.
And it's four stories and it's concrete, so it's kind of unique that way.
Nice
so you've
boutique.
Got, you know, check.
Yeah.
But 20 deals, right? And at a time, I was like, we've written more deals there than we have at Frame on the east side, which is way less money. Smaller
interesting,
homes.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah. So I think my point is that, A, the west side market is resilient. There's some resources here that, you know, and maybe they get that, you know, it's going to close in, I don't know, like 2028. So I think we all believe that interest rates will be a lot lower.
Yeah.
And so they've got the gumption to say, okay, like it's going to go down, but I'm taking a position today because the product is cool. So, and 20 deals is not 200 deals, right? So we're not threading the needle of thousands of homes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what needs to happen is interest rates need to come down a little bit. The world needs to believe that, okay, we're not going to have another crazy situation where interest rates go up again, or, you know, it just needs to. And if you track, like you do, sales over the last 15 years, and then you overlay the five-year bank rate, it's almost the correlation between high volume and low interest rates is almost stupid. It's so closely correlated.
So interesting.
And so I think we need a little bit of help from, you know, maybe the June Bank 5th. Of Canada, exactly, if they took interest rates and interest and mortgage payments and stuff out of the basket of goods. Like, yeah. I'm no economist, but but I've been paying attention for the last couple of years.
Yeah,
let's get that basket of goods redialed in.
Yeah. What's in the box?
Yeah, exactly. A different what's in the basket. Yeah. So I'm not answering the question because I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few things that need to go in our favor. I think the purpose-built rental will, all those projects have a component of purpose-built rental that the factors that are checking those boxes, it's easier to make those deals work than condo deals right now because of the financing. And I think Daryl was talking about that the other day, just because of the support around purpose-built rental. Those humans, those things are going to get built, which will attract a human and be a place for someone to live. So that there's that right off the bat. And then you can layer in the condo. I think the condo will be, it's harder to make the deals work. Mm-hmm. And the pre-sale requirement, you know, like my next two projects are what? We've got Cambion 43rd, which is right across from Oak Ridge. And that's going to be 175 homes.
Right.
And then there's a hotel component. So we have a 15-story hotel going into that. And so that 149 homes, that's not too scary from a pre-sale. I mean, sorry, 175 homes, not too scary, 29 stories from a pre-sale requirement. But on Manson and Ash, we have two towers of 18 stories, and that's 250 homes. So that at 65 to 70% pre-sale, that's a, you know, you have to get through a lot of homes before you can start digging. And you've got your 12-month window to do that, which is great that it's not 9 months. But it's still, you know, at like, call it $1,800-$1,900 a foot. That's an expensive home. So our one bedrooms there will probably start at $850 to $1,000,000. And then going up from there. And so the affordability is a thing, but there is a market for the right home and the right price that's done right close to Oak Ridge. I think that those things check.
Right.
And it looks like a deal compared to Oak Ridge itself.
When we think about the West Side, we often, the narrative is downsizers. Mm. Is that, who's the buyers at Ashley? Like, because I would imagine there's also a lot of young families or people that want, maybe they have their parents on the
people
West Side.
People that grew up on the West Side trying to get back.
Yeah. Definitely.
The people that are on the West Side, there's always a strong demand for people that want to maybe stay on the West Side, but just need different types of housing, right?
And that's definitely the case. And I would say the downsizer is the smaller component of that story for the buyer. A lot of it is a young human who's maybe getting some help from a parent, or they've built up equity somewhere else and they're coming into something now with help from a parent with a deposit. So that we do see that. And I hate to say, you know, use the same word everybody uses about the bank of mom and dad, or the bank of grandma, but it's true. And so that is a definite buyer. And then there's also a buyer who is a parent buying for a kid right out of school. So they've finished university. They're now starting to get into the workforce, or they will be in the workforce in a few years' time. And the parent is buying them like a one-bedroom condo. And it's not my parents.
I was going to say, Matt, a graduation gift.
Yeah, but it's a thing. Like, think about how, I mean, I think I talk to younger humans that I work with, and, you know, oftentimes a parent has helped them, or, you know, their friends just bought a house. And I'm like, how do they do it? Well, you know, their parents helped them out a little bit.
Their parents have the means and they want to keep them close, and it makes sense.
It makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Like, makes total sense. That is more of a thing than we talk about it, the media talks about it a little bit, but it's really, it is a true thing.
You see it more and more in the past, you know, few years. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's at least down payments are almost, for younger people, almost always gifted to some percent.
And it ties with why deposit structure is such a big deal right now, mm-hmm. because money is not free. And I think in previous cycles, people have pulled money out of a house to pay for their deposits on the pre-sale, which is why a 20% deposit is no problem, and they pay it on time all the time because it costs very little to pull out of a house and pay the interest on it. Versus today, that's a painful thing if you're doing 5% plus.
This is funny. So actually, we do this MLA Presale Pulse thing where they send us these interesting little tidbits. And one of them was that incentive is actually like
the
incentive that's really working right now is dropping deposit structures.
Right. Cause I didn't hear a peep about deposit structure for like for years. Right. Years.
And in fact, they were sometimes they were 25%.
Like it was became. Yeah. Or 30% for a foreign buyer.
Right.
So fast forward, like what changed? And that's the only thing I can think of is that people were funding that deposit by pulling it out of something else to, and now it's just like, nope.
Right.
It's not going to do it at 7%.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's just crazy money. So I don't know if that's a thing, but, or it's just having the cash on hand. It's tricky.
I'm just thinking about this idea of the counter-cyclical. Like we've been talking about, like 10 years of like, oh, the gap between the east side and the west side is, it makes the east side interesting in 2013, 2014. And it's slowly gotten smaller and smaller and smaller.
Now the west side looks so attractive.
Like in a lot of ways. So is it, do you see it as like a wave that's kind of like the, you know, you got a kiddie pool where you've picked up one side and all that's the water goes east and then it's going to come back gangbusters
I think gangbusters with an asterisk, like a small g asterisk, gangbusters, small g maybe.
Okay.
In the, you know, we are talking about
we have a title.
we're talking about tough price points, right? So, so I think what we can look at is I mean, I pulled like the last 6 months worth of sales somewhere here. I've got it. And it's generally like the west side is like 100 and something transactions of concrete homes 5 years and younger, like that number doesn't really change that much. Like 136 homes in the last 6 months, median price point of 1328 a foot. So like, I feel like what we're saying is that will push up, that once that volume starts picking up, then the price will follow.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, you know, we know that prices are lagging, you know, lags volume.
Yeah.
And so as we start seeing that wave coming, like it's going to push it a little bit, but I don't think we're talking about a tidal wave,
mm-hmm.
but definitely the activity is going to breed more activity. And as the momentum gets going, people will start seeing it.
Do you have any thoughts and just thinking about, cause you have a project in, on Earl and Kingsway there, which is kind of, there's a lot of new construction right there.
Yeah.
And then you have these projects on the west side, like, this is maybe, I'm trying to think how to frame this. It doesn't sound kind of silly, but like what's an appropriate gap in the price per square foot? Because most stuff, like I you can speak to exactly what the price per square foot is on
just
the east side there.
Just shy of 1300.
Yeah. And so, then on the east side.
So we're just shy of 1300 on the east side for the pre-sale, like concrete. Yep. So it's 10-story concrete. So it's, you know, that's a kind of different product a little bit. And then we're just shy of 1800.
So it's like a $500
delta between the two, So, and that's a big nut. But I think for the right buyer with, and it's got to come down to interest rates.
Yeah.
Right? Like the cost of carrying, if you put down 30% or something, like the cost of carrying that has got to just be a little bit easier for people.
Right.
Yeah.
So like one thing we were talked about before is just this kind of gap between resale and presale. And you just brought it up, right? Yeah. Like 1300, 1328 on the west side for, what is that, five-year-old concrete.
Yeah.
So that's very similar to what you're buying.
Brand new on Kingsway.
Yeah.
And, yeah, exactly.
So can you talk a little bit about that gap and the challenges there, and does it make sense?
Well, that is so you've hit on a thing that is like my little pet thing. Like I've tracked this across all submarkets for the last so since about 2018, I really started paying attention to this gap and trying to dial in like what is the gap and why is there a gap and what drives the gap. And it's really interesting. Like it varies based on kind of just the sales to listings ratios. Like I try to correlate, like, is it sales, when the sales to listing ratios go up, does the gap expand? And I think what I've discovered, what I've really observed, is that we in the pre-sale world feel the change in the market way after it happens in the resale world. So what will happen is if you think about late 2020, the resale world started getting cranking.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't feel it in the pre-sale world until early 2021. I was still getting ground down on deals in Metrotown in late 2020 and on a townhouse project in Coquitlam. I was still not selling lots of homes quickly and like having to do little giveaways and what have you to get the deals done versus, and when I look back at the resale at that time, it was like month over month, it was way over 10-year averages for those months. But we didn't feel it yet. We only felt it like 3 or 4 months later, once people started missing out on deals on the resale, then they come to us.
Yeah.
So I think as that happens, then the gap gets wider when there's not a lot of pre-sale inventory in the market. And suddenly the human misses out on the resale.
Yeah.
And now I'm pointing it at him or Matt.
Yeah.
And then the human misses out on the resale. So then they come into a pre-sale thing and they miss out on the pre-sale because there's not a lot, like they go to three places and they miss out. And now the price starts expanding because now I can get it as a developer. Now I've got more elasticity on my price. I can start jacking that.
So it's Daryl Simpson said, who was on the show, this was his first appearance on the show. He said it was, I think, 3 months when the resale market gets going. It's 3 months after that you'll start to feel it in pre-sale.
Yeah. So three,
which is,
four
I think,
months,
a great, great indicator for buyers, right?
No,
like
kidding.
People that have been, like if the resale market starts moving, like you maybe don't need, you shouldn't be dragging your feet on negotiating back and forth
with
someone like yourself.
Right? Yeah. Just get it done.
Get it done.
Yeah. So, and that's real. Like we literally don't feel it until, that 3 or 4 months. And then we start and we go, oh, shit. And, off we go. But I think so that gap is also driven by, as that price starts going, then developers like me will make a land buy at a number based on what the pre-sales are doing. And that sets a new low, like a new base. So then I buy my land based on what the current transactions are in the pre-sale world. Mm-hmm. And that's what the land guys then say, okay, now they sold at 19, I remember Jinju selling at like $900 a foot in Coquitlam or $890 or something. And then that was suddenly like all the brokers, that's the new number. And so all the land people, the price just went dunk on the land. So now we're committing to land at a higher number. And so the baseline just went up. So now that gap between resale and pre-sale is not set because I committed to my dirt at this price. And so that's when you get into like the West Side. I used to, when we were doing the Bell Park thing, I would take out the West Bank Oak Ridge projects from that little analysis of what is the gap between pre-sale and resale, because they were just,
so
$2,100 a foot versus, your resale number at 13 something. It was just out of whack, right? So I'd take that out as an outlier and then look at what is the difference. And generally, I would find like at any given time in the market over the last decade, we've been between 4% and like 25%. Variance between the resale number and the pre-sale number.
And when was 4%?
Right. I can tell you exactly when it was. Yeah. It was in Metrotown in 2019 and late 2020. 4% was the difference between the typical pre-sale sale price and the resale number, which was like $1,190 or something, or $1,204 or whatever.
Huh.
Yeah. And then, on the West Side, you've got something it's more pronounced. So like we won't even talk about downtown because like that variance is crazy.
Yeah.
But on the outside of downtown, the West Side has it's about 20% difference. And I can't, like, it's just based on what people committed to for land, what it costs to build the thing. And today that number is astronomical and not slowing down. And so you end up with a number that you have to be. And I think that's one of the things that's a bit scary about being a developer today is that we're not all talking about what can the market bear. We're talking about what price can I deliver it for? The bank wants to see 12%. The city wants to have me not more than 15%. So I've got to thread the needle between 12 and 15% to make a project work when construction prices are going up every month.
Do you think that the gap, like, because downtown clearly has got to be the biggest gap in the region.
Definitely.
Do you know, my thinking is that bodes really well for the resale market downtown, which we've been kind of beating that drum, but it just doesn't seem to be.
Nobody seems to listen.
How soft downtown is, all things considered, right? Yeah. I mean, we had we've had people on here basically saying, like, look, most things are below replacement cost. Yeah. And
well, also, we have, like, just anecdotally, our own listings. Like, you're like, imagine 5 years ago or 8 years ago saying, would you rather have, like, a pretty nice one bed downtown or, like, something at, like, Knight and Kingsway?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, now you're like Knight and Kingsway all day. Like, you'll get, it will be super busy. It's just a strange moment.
In the inventory, like in pockets of downtown, there's lots of inventory right now where kind of consistently there's never a lot of inventory, like certain buildings or certain pockets. So it is, it's.
What do you think drives that?
Well, I think right now, just inventory creeping up over the last few months.
Just not being absorbed, right?
I also think part of it is we're seeing, I think this is maybe in more of the smaller, there's a lot of rental units downtown. I think a lot of people are listing right now because of the new rental rules, maybe some triggered by the cap gain, you know. But I think some of that stuff is probably a result of policy.
Or just layers and layers of new policy, right? Like, it's like people are throwing up their hands.
And then also, I mean, this was, we talked about this on the show recently, but this idea of, like, we always think of buyers on the sidelines, but we never really think about sellers on the sidelines. And sellers have been sitting patiently. Like, you know, real estate's a sport in this city. And the idea of, like, going on the market when you don't feel like it's the right time. People will wait, but they can't wait forever.
No, exactly.
So
so
that, and everybody waited all last year.
So that's the regular human waited all last year. And then you got developers that are waiting because all of the pressure points don't make sense and the performer doesn't work.
Right.
So you've got developer sellers waiting too. And and we have a deadline too, because sometimes that burn rate is, you got to decide where you want to go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking right now, like, it's, I mean, there's been, like, cheap money versus expensive money now. It's an interesting time. Like, how important do you think June 5th is in the mind of the development community?
I think it's really, I think it's really important. So this is how important it is. Prior to things starting to go up inflation-wise, when was the last time you ever thought about the Bank of Canada interest rate announcement, right?
It's hilarious. I know way more than I care to know about the Bank of Canada.
Right? I have the dates in my calendar.
Well, the fact that we can say basket of goods and everybody's like, yes, I also agree with you that we should be taking our shelter costs. Yeah. Like, like, who would have thought?
Yeah, exactly. Who would have thought? So I think it's really important. I think it's will it make a difference to the pre-sale buyer, like, materially? No. But it's the sentiment.
Sentiment.
Right? Like, it's just the sentiment. You know, like, it just means, okay, like, the world is, we're on a trajectory. Are we, you know, the thing that we think that interest rates will be lower later, well, they will, because look, the bank just dropped their interest rate. So I think that definitely will make a difference. I was going to say, I have an idea for you guys. I think it would be really great if you got Eric Carlson on here to talk about how do we survive the 90s, right? Like, if you think about high interest rates, weird, or someone like that. Like,
Eric Carlson has an open invite on this program.
And the question is, how do we survive the 90s, right? Like, how do we survive? You know, layers of different things, interest rates, politics.
Right.
That.
Yeah.
And we haven't had him on the show for probably 5 years. So I think this
is a good time.
It is a good time.
Maybe have me back with Eric so I can ask him.
Yeah. Special guest host.
That's right.
Amazing. Well, I think we got to talk a little bit about market predictions and what you think. What do you think happens in the balance of 2024?
You know what? I think we're gonna bump along a little bit. And with a bit of an upward trajectory. So I've been watching, and I watch like an eagle, the monthly sales and how they relate to the 10-year average for that month. And so I'm just watching that thing and watching for the little, I have a gray and a blue bar, for the blue bar to grow as it relates to the gray bar being the historical
average
for that month. So I'm looking forward to, you know, I think we're going to have a little, probably what it will look like in reality is a bit of a blip and then a slow kind of grind up, but hopefully there's an up. I'm just kind of naturally an optimist, so
yeah,
there's always an up in my world.
Matt has a question about a niece that he can't.
Okay, all right.
Hit me.
Yeah.
Hit me.
It written here. No. Okay. You got a niece. She calls you up. She says, what should I buy? An investment. Say what? What do we give you? $2 million.
Okay. So
$2 million might be too high, but
yeah.
Maybe a
million. Let's pretend she's got it like $1.3 million.
Yeah. Okay.
$1.4 million.
Yeah.
All right.
You're thinking of a specific unit?
Oh, yeah.
I got like the C2 plan. It's obvious.
Yeah. Overlooking the lane. Yeah. Because there's not going to be anything back there ever. Yeah. Exactly. And there's a plunge pool next door. It's close to the elevator so you can get to the rooftop. Yeah. Yeah. I got the one. Yeah. Hook me up. Are you shopping all over the Lower Mainland?
All over the Lower Mainland. Best opportunity right now.
So I would go with I would pick one of three spots. So not being if I take off my blue hat, which is the Peterson hat.
Right.
I personally am a fan of Metrotown. I think the Metrotown market is again a little bit of a mature market, and so it has some similarities to the West Side in that it's a bit of a mature market. People get the brand, they get what it's all about. So I would say a Metrotown thing, because there's a lot of inventory and you're probably going to get a bit of a better deal than you would have got at when I was selling stuff in Metrotown in 2023.
So. And are you thinking resale or presale?
I just think presale.
It's okay. Convenient to live in Metrotown. Like I feel like...
It's incredible.
It is. It really is.
And so I'm a white guy. And so white people normally look at me and go, why? Like, no, Metrotown. Like, Metrotown is awesome. Like, yeah. I had a construction human that moved into one of our condos in Metrotown. He's like, I'm never leaving. Like, I can walk everywhere. Like, why would I want to go anywhere else? You can, and I think, so this is Barrett's personal view, Metrotown is more about Crystal Mall than it is about the big mall.
The Metrotown.
Yeah, it's like Crystal Mall. Like you
or Metropolis or whatever it's called.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not, sure it's about that, but like really it's about the convenience of being able to get all the different things.
Yeah.
And the diversity of the different food and you got TNT right there. You got all the things. Anyway, I'm a Metrotown fan.
Screen replaced. All right. So Metrotown is number one.
Metrotown's number one. The other one, and I would say for inventory, like if she's like really well healed, then I would say like if you're looking for, so being a biased human that I am, I would have to say Ashley, just like, because you got time to come measure the couch, right? Like the space for the couch.
And I know I've already said this, but it is truly, we've kind of watched Ashley since the early days with Emma, like through MLA. And it's actually a really cool, like I was thinking about it, like if you're, especially if you're coming from like the detached market or something, because it is very boutique. Like it's a lot of people are not looking to sit on an elevator and go up 25 floors or something.
Exactly.
Like it is a pretty special project that way.
And coming in, like from the outside, like January, a hot minute, a concrete 4-story building. Like, come on. Like, where are you going to get that?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, no one's going to do that again in a hurry. And
it's not Canby, like it's also it's different from, the typical offerings of like, Canby, right?
Yeah. And we're doing a whole thing right now on the kitchens because the kitchens are lights out. And so like the spec is really amazing. Like it fits really well together. It's got like beautiful marble. It's just like it's a next level offering. So if she's well healed, then I would say that.
All right. And then you had
the third one, go where the inventory is, but Coquitlam. There's lots of opportunities in Coquitlam right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's another community that's kind of early in its days. It's going to be an awesome location over time as it gets built out and, as the amenities start showing up.
Right.
Yeah.
So two communities that are mature, and then we have
an up and comer.
Coquitlam, people have lived there forever. They're probably screaming like, what are you talking about? Not mature, but but West Coquitlam, the rebrand,
in terms of its transformation with the transit nodes and when I was working with George in 2011, we launched a little project called Bloom, some townhomes in Coquitlam, and it was not the neighborhood that it is today.
No, right?
Like it was not the neighborhood. Like if that thing today would sell like crazy, but it took forever to get us through that inventory.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different time. There was the SkyTrain was a fledgling,
right?
It's going to happen.
Those are three fantastic.
But definitely, like the inventory is the thing. Like if there's inventory, you're gonna get a, you have a chance to measure the couch.
Yeah, Yeah.
We do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
Yeah.
Question number one, one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
Okay, so I haven't finished one of them, which is I have a World War II, World War I interest, and so it's called The Bastard Brigade. I can't remember who it's by, but it's a cool book. It's all about...
Bastard Brigade. Brigade.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be a movie starring Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
it has to do with all the race for the nuclear thing. So it's
okay.
Yeah. It's kind of cool because those guys were all just making shit up as they went. Like right. There was no, it was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. You think you have a lot of pressure in your life, eh?
Yeah.
In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Okay. So a few years ago, I started working out consistently in the mornings, which is a thing. So I have this whole thing in the morning. So I do a little bit of reading, meditation, I work out. And then in the last July, I committed to doing a bit of a ridiculous mountain bike ride in Europe this year. And so I've been training since January for that. So I've added a lot of riding to my world. So I commute into work twice or three times a week, and then I'm squeezing in spin sessions all the time.
When's the race or the
July, the first week of July.
And can you give us what's the context of the race?
So to be completely clear, it's not the race. There is a race it's called the Stone King Rally. And it's a 6-day race starts high up in the Alps in France and ends on the water in Italy. And it's 6 days of kind of 40 to 60 kilometers a day with ridiculous up and down. So I'm not doing that, just to be clear. Okay. So you can do the...
you can watch that on TV.
Yeah. But you can do a tour where you follow the route with it. So it's super cool. So there's 16 of us going and two shuttles, and you just follow the route. So you do the same route, but you don't race. So it's not, there's no pressure of like...
That'd be so great.
I've been thinking about this... It's Jesse Itzler, I think his name is, but he's got this idea that every year you should do something big that you almost like you're creating chapters in your life.
Okay, cool.
So every year is punctuated by something, but I feel like you always think back to 2024 and that will probably be brings you back, right? Is that
and what I didn't expect is the journey has been so cool.
Yeah.
So, I've been like I'm fitter than I've been in two decades and I feel great. Like, it's amazing.
Huh.
So it's been super cool. Yeah. But I don't have children that are 2 and 4
at least,
years old.
Yeah.
Adam, I don't need to make breakfast.
That's why I'm so out of shape.
Children. It's the children. They extract their pound of flesh.
Yeah. Question number three. What have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
Okay. So I'm kind of off the... I'm a bit of a rugby fanatic. And so I've been watching the Six Nations thing. It's a documentary on Netflix by the same people that did the F1 series.
It's about
the Six Nations rugby tournament in Europe. So between like England, France, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and Italy. That's pretty cool.
Huh.
Yeah. And that's off the back of like last year I went down a rabbit hole of like there was the Rugby World Cup, which South Africa won for the fourth time. So, which is, by the way, the more times than anybody else has ever done it. I'm just going to say that out there to all the Kiwis that might be listening. Sorry for that.
That's the same league as All Blacks, I guess?
Six Nations is just the British, it's just in Europe. So it's England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, France, and Italy. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's cool. It just gives you a bit of insight into the craziness of rugby.
Yeah.
Favorite band or music? I'll let you go.
No, I grew up under a musical rock, so I have I'm the most.
Oh, I was gonna say, what is it, Saving Silverman or no? No, that's not it. What's this, Sugarman? Like,
no,
remember that?
Sugarman.
I was like, I thought you were gonna say a Regime.
No, I'm clueless. Like, I grew up under a rock, so I rely on my children for music. So.
Oh yeah.
I was introduced recently to Noah Kahan. I think just here. So that's been my kind of go-to recently. Yeah.
Pretty catchy stuff.
Coffee house music.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Doesn't require too much brain space.
Right. And last but not least, something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
So I would have, so definitely my Garmin watch. Like I got a Fenix 6 Pro, whatever, when I started this little getting fit journey recently. And it's awesome.
Does it work well with your phone?
Yeah. They've just actually introduced a new app for the phone that just like, it's great. Like it just, it syncs up.
Does it do, those watches give you your VO2 age, right?
That's right. Yeah.
How old are you?
Oh my word.
Okay.
This is getting a little personal.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a cool thing. This is why the thing is so cool. I now have a 5 handle in front of my age in real life, IRL. So I just turned 50 in April, and it's a hard number to go. But my age thing is 41.
Wow.
And when I started this thing and when I started training in January, it was like 42 or something. So I've dropped a year.
Oh, wow.
My commute time, like riding back to North Van, I've dropped 10 minutes off the commute, which it was a hour and 2 minutes, and it's now 52 minutes or something. And my heart rate has gone down like average 10 beats a minute on the ride back.
No kidding.
Yeah. So this is all like the Garmin watch. It's super cool.
I'm in a
V2 I've gone down the rabbit hole.
Crisis right now. I'm 65.
It's the children.
It's funny, but we had this call. I texted Matt in a panic yesterday asking him what his VO2 max was because mine has gone down recently because of the type of training that I've been doing. I've been doing more just in the gym, but less cardio.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. It's always a trade-off.
That's cool. What's your?
Well, I just do it with the Apple Watch. So it's, I think I'm... What was it, around
45?
I'm in the above average. I'm right at the peak. I'm trying to get past, but I think the Garmin is more, I don't know if it's more accurate, but I feel like I'm moving towards Garmin.
It's not as user, like there's, you have to get used to like the funky, like it's not as user friendly.
Yeah.
Like it's very non-Apple from a like.
Well, the thing that I was worried about is I had AirPods, and then I bought a friend recommended, you got to get these like some other brand, and it like didn't pick up the calls, and it was hello, just didn't work. You know how Apple's so well integrated? Works, that's the one concern, but I like the idea of the age, that's for sure. I don't know what that puts me.
The whole thing's been cool. Like it's just fun to get into the nitty gritty of it and like figure it out, and especially when you got a big goal.
What kind of body fat are you working with?
Save that for the second appearance on the show.
When you have your back.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, no, thanks. I'm good. These guys are kind of weird.
Why do you have a measuring tape? Okay. Well, maybe we'll leave it there. But Barrett, how can people learn more about what you're up to? And of course, Peterson Group.
I would say, so you just, if you check out Ashley at Oak Ridge, that would be a thing. So go over and maybe register and get the information. And then, LinkedIn is a good one. Peterson Group is always posting cool stuff on LinkedIn. Like one of the cool values of the company is giving back. And so there's a lot of outreach and community stuff that we do, which is kind of unique. Like when last did you see kind of gratitude and giving back on the wall of a value? So kind of like that.
I feel like the talent pool at Peterson is huge as well. I feel we've got a few people we know there that are like just really, really bright people.
And every time I open a new door, there's another smart human.
Yeah.
Like it's like I keep finding different things that we do that I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Okay. And you're a really cool human too. So it's been a good journey. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward to further chats.
So there you have, folks, our discussion with Barrett Sprousen, Vice President of Sales and Project Marketing at the Peterson Group.
You know, I love that episode with Barrett. It was awesome having him in studio. I really mean that. Like, Peterson Group stand out in terms of the talent that they have there. It's a great group of people. And Barrett...
Some great musicians there.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, really not surprising, though, is Barrett, super bright guy, fascinating conversation, tons of experience, really understands the region, and some real excellent takeaways in terms of not only the West Side, but, you know, just his thoughts on upcoming neighborhoods and where the market's going.
Really kind of digging deep on what he's seeing and why he's thinking about things the way he does it was kind of a really fascinating kind of component of that. As was his story, right? It's an interesting
like, we'll give it a whirl in Vancouver. Next thing you know, you're selling pre-sales in Vegas. And I mean, it's a life story that is an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that too, as he was telling it. It's like this idea of, you know, he immigrates here, kind of rolls the dice on Vancouver, ends up falling in love, then has a really falling in love with the city.
Yeah.
He came here with his partner.
Right.
But then he has this kind of like he's covered all the areas of project sales and soup to nuts kind of development.
Have you ever heard anyone talk about the urban market before? That speaks to the deep knowledge of the rural market where he spent a considerable amount
of secondary
time.
Markets. Yeah, yeah. Like that's exactly. And so, I mean, it was awesome having Barry. We got to have him back in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah. What else do we have for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer, VIP access to pre-sales, stats, different types of stats, sales ratios where you can dig into submarkets and different price bands. We have Deal of the Month. There's just no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. We also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt, because if you're not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us. Set up your own PCS account. This is the best way to monitor the market. And again, it's free. Sign up. Yeah.
I like it. And if you want to talk about that or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We, of course, have that Kokomo line as well, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We'll have a great week and back next week with another great episode.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.